there for more than an hour thinking about last night. It was over her head. How could she express it? All the time she had thought she was having sex was a waste of time. Nothing was like last night. When he awoke from his catnap, she handed him the piece of paper. Kadir took the poem and turned on his overhead light, reading silently. The Dream. My eyes are closed, but I see you so clear. I stare in your eyes, and the world disappears, leaving us together so no one can see. Your body moves closer, so you're next to me. Your fingers unbutton and take off my clothes, your hands moving all over from my head to my toes. Without delay, you start to play. Your brown and warm fingers will find their own way. It's feeling so good, and when I touch you back, you're long and you're hard, and it makes me wet. I kiss your chest in a rapture sublime, as your fingers play music in three-quarter time. We're caught in a rapture without a doubt. You push my head lower, I open my mouth. Hours pass by, you pick up my face, and the look in your eyes states so simply your case. This pussy is yours, and you're gonna take it. If I had said no, you know you would have raped it. You flip it and turn it and throw it around until you have me face down on the ground. You found your position, ass up in the air. You get behind me and force it in there, pushing whatever, stopping your stroke. You fuck me for hours, like you're going for broke. You've totally flipped, and you're out of control. Your love is insane, and I am your goal. You're ready to nut, not a minute too soon. I hear the alarm, and I'm back in my room. I open my eyes, and I hear the door shut. I thought I was dreaming, but we really did fuck. Kadir just looked at her. He couldn't believe her little poem had made his dick hard. "Come here," he said, pulling her face close enough to kiss her. He folded up the paper and put it in his pocket. The stewardess walked by, and Kadir asked her how much longer the flight would be. He was so glad. He wanted it to be over. He wanted to be home. Because of so many cancellations, they were able to get a flight straight to Philadelphia.
"I had the best time of my life, Kadir,"
she said, looking into his eyes. "I did too. I wish we were still there."
"I know. Remember when you fell off the jet ski and almost killed us?"
she said, laughing at him. "Yeah. And remember that wave that snuck up behind you and tumbled your ass to shore?" He was laughing as hard as she was now.
"It was really the best. Especially, you know, last night,"
she said. "Yeah, it was all that."
"Yeah, it was so blue."
"So blue?" he said, looking puzzled.
"Yeah, you know, the opposite of having the blues is so blue."
She paused for a moment, thinking about the time she had spent with him, then added,
"I wish we didn't have to go home."
He took her hand and squeezed. "But we have to, G. We have to go home."
The drop-off.
For the rest of the flight, they talked about past relationships. Kadir confessed to seeing Sherelle, but basically explained why the relationship was over. He was 25, no kids, graduated from college with a bachelor's in psychology, grew up in a fucked up part of North Philly, and was poor until his pop started running street numbers and robbing banks. His dad opened up a little store, and from there he bought a few properties and basically paid his bills on time and established a solid line of credit. Kadir was a lot like his father. He just wanted to get paid and be legit one day. Kadir grew up without seeing a real Christmas. He had seen plenty of hard times, but his family made sure he got his education. Kadir heard the same speech over and over again. "You're gonna go to school, you hear me? You're gonna go
And you're gonna learn. You know why? Just because the white man don't want you to. Over and over, that was all Kadir heard. If black people didn't go to school, they would always be left behind. That's how it all started. His father told him the black children picked cotton and worked the fields while the white children went to school. Niggas didn't know shit. And they don't know shit today because they was brainwashed 400 years ago, son. Remember that. His father would go on and on. But what his dad had preached to him all those years made him a very positive individual. The substance Kadir was filled with set him aside from other brothers who were out there, especially those who hadn't even finished high school. Kadir was an intellectual. He had made it through illegal means, through the drug game. After college and supposedly studying to be a dentist, he often wondered how he got caught up in the game. He never wanted this for himself. He had no idea that he would turn out to be one of the largest drug dealers in the city. But once he got into the game, there was no turning back. This was not his destination. He was only supposed to pay for school and become a dentist. Hard times hit at home. Pops was getting old, with no retirement fund. The streets were calling, and Kadir answered. Hard times led him to this life, and even with the money, times were still hard, with all the death, drug wars, and jealousy. It was a vicious game and a vicious circle to be caught in. The money came so easy and his lifestyle became so large. To stop, even with the money he had saved, would not afford him the extravagant lifestyle he was accustomed to. The more money he made, the more consequences he faced. For every action, there is a reaction. He never stopped to look at those consequences, just as the people who used drugs never thought about the consequences of what they were doing. Kadir was relieved when their flight landed. Ra's son was at the airport waiting for him by the baggage area. They all exited the airport and went straight to the car. Ra's son and Kadir were busy talking about all of the events that took place while he was out of town. Gina just wanted to get back to her house and make sure everything was still there. She knew her neighborhood and she knew the people in her neighborhood. Most of them were no good. People gone bad. Crackheads, bugging for a hit of crack, belittling themselves. Most were penny-ante thieves or just fiends doing literally anything to get high. Then you had your neighborhood drug pushers or other lunatics with 40s in one hand and guns in the other, trying to be men. The rest were either the elderly or the harmless, and they made up a very small percentage. Kwa interrupted her thoughts. Gina, I'm going to drop you off. She really didn't want to be dropped off. She just wanted to drop her things off and stay with him. There was a big difference. When they pulled up on her block, everything looked the same. Trash was all over the place. The Vietnamese people were on the corner barbecuing on the sidewalk as usual. Little kids were playing in the street, and everyone was sitting on their porches being nosy and talking about everyone they could. Kadir and Gina got out of the car. Ra's son got her luggage from out of the trunk, then hopped into the front seat, tilting the chair backward as he played with the CD player. Kadir walked up the porch to her door.
When are you coming back?
Asked Gina, knowing that she should have just played like it didn't make a difference. I don't know. I got a lot to catch up on. I'll call you later on, though. A feeling of frustration suddenly covered Gina like a blanket.
What does that mean, you'll call later?
She asked, unlocking her door. It means I'll call later. If I can stop back over here tonight, I will. If I can't, I'll see you tomorrow. Gina, I really don't think you understand what is going on. I got shit to take care of. You can understand that, right?
I can understand, Quadir. It's just that I want us to be together.
Baby, we will be together. Let me go so I can take care of some things, he said. Gina just looked at him as if she couldn't believe he was leaving her. As she opened the door, he pulled her close to him and kissed her, lasting only a few seconds, feeling like an eternity. As Kadir let her go, he winked at her and smiled.
I'll call you later.
Bye.
She waved, and he was gone. Gina listened to her answer machine while she started to unpack her bags. Bria, Sabrina, Shay, Kim, Bridget, Sheila, Miss Bowden, Gagit, Gary, Tracy, Landa, Barry, Brian, Rome, a bill collector, and of course, Jamal had all called. Jamal, however, had called at least 15 times. Gina called Ms. Bowden. Her message seemed urgent. At first, she couldn't believe what she was hearing. Her heart stopped, and tears welled up in her eyes. Gina sat on the bed in a state of disbelief, only finding its truth in Ms. Bowden's voice. Why, how, when, and where popped into Gina's mind. Ms. Bowden calmly told Gina the story as it had been told to her by the police.
I don't know what I'm going to do without that child here,
Ms. Bowden said, sounding heartbroken. Gina couldn't help but feel sorrow. She was so hurt. She couldn't speak. Ms. Bowden, choking back her grief, told Gina of the events she knew surrounding Sahira's death and the funeral, which was in 3 days. Gina hung up the phone and sat in complete silence as tears fell down her cheeks, reminiscing about the years she and Sahira spent together, from playing with Barbie dolls and getting sprayed by fire hydrants, graduating from high school, to double dating and sharing their experiences with each other. They had always been best friends. For the rest of the evening and until Gina fell asleep, she thought of Sahira, wishing she could tell her about Kadir. She wanted to call her so bad, but she wouldn't be there. The only things that would be there were priceless memories. The days to follow were rough. Gina didn't eat, nor did she sleep. Not only was she in mourning for her best friend, but also in mourning for Kadir. She hadn't heard from him since he dropped her off at home. Now it seemed as if he'd disappeared.
He said he'd call,
she kept telling herself. It was a horrible feeling of anticipation.
Maybe I should call him.
She had no idea where she put his number the night she had met him in New York. Reminiscing about the fabulous time she had had in the Bahamas only made it worse. The phone rang, and she ran to answer, just knowing it was Kadir. But the voice on the other end would say only, "Where you been?"
"Who is this?"
she asked. "Oh, now you don't know my voice." Suddenly, she did know the voice. It was Jamal. Figures he'd be calling. Damn, she wanted Kadir. Gina was so disappointed that she couldn't hold the simplest of conversations.
"Jamal, what is it? Why are you calling my house this late?"
"Oh, it's like that now?"
"Yeah, it's like that."
"You're a fucking trip. You ain't shit. You lucky I don't come over there and kick your ass." Her slow simmer erupted, her mouth so tight in anger she could barely speak.
"I don't have time for you. You are beneath me,"
she told him as she hung up the phone. A few seconds later, it rang again.
"What?"
"Well, damn, bitch, fuck you too," he said as Gina hung up on him again. When it rang a third time, she said,
"Hello."
One more time, praying it wasn't Jamal. "Yo, what up?" said the girl on the other line.
"Hi, Kim, what's up?"
"Nothing, chilling. What's up with you?"
"Nothing, just got back from the Bahamas."
"You hear about Sahira and Winston in that shootout?" Kim asked.
"Yeah, and I'm real fucked up about it."
"I know you are, as tight as y'all was," Kim said.
"Her family's real hurt about it."
"Who was you in the Bahamas with, Jamal?"
"No, I went with Kadir. You know him?"
"Kadir from North Philly?" asked Kim. "I know him. Everybody knows him. I heard he got all the young girls strung."
"What do you mean?"
What I said. Kadir ain't nothing but a whore. But he's good for a couple dollars, though.
He is.
Asked Gina, not seeing her baby boo like that at all. Seriously, though, the nigga is no joke. Everybody's trying to see him.
Who?
Everybody. Everybody's trying to see him. What part of the breakdown don't you understand?
At that moment, Gina's heart sank. No wonder his ass hadn't called back. After pausing, Kim continued on.
So what? You done kicked Jamal to the curb now that you're fucking with Kadir?
Gina didn't know where she was coming from.
It's just not gonna work out. Shit is over. I can't explain it.
Did you have a good time in the Bahamas?
It was so blue.
Gina said, completely changing her tone of voice.
How'd you get there?
We flew over.
Gina was loving it. I want to go away.
So, who you messing with?
Asked Gina, figuring she was going to say Jamal.
Who aren't I messing with?
Asked Kim right back, laughing at the question.
Shit, the man I want is nowhere to be found.
Well, maybe you'll find him.
I doubt it. The ones you want are never the ones who want you.
So true,
said Gina, thinking of Kadir.
I just don't understand why you and Jamal didn't work out.
Well, damn, why is you trying to?
I'm saying, Gina, Jamal gave you the world. He did everything. Shit, all those women Kadir got? I would have stayed right there with Jamal.
All what women?
Gina felt her heart sinking, and it was sinking fast.
All the women he got. The man is a millionaire. Quashit is blue.
Gina felt as if she had to defend herself.
Well, he took me to the Bahamas.
You in there. I'm not saying you're not. All I'm saying is that a nigga like Kadir will be in the Bahamas next week with somebody else. At least with Jamal, you had a motherfucker who came home every night and gave you whatever you wanted. You must not want a brother who's going to treat you right, said Kim.
Gina had just about enough of the Jamal cheering section. Kim had fucked up her night with the bullshit about Kadir.
Why am I telling this bitch my business?
Thought Gina. It wasn't like her and Kim rolled on a regular. Usually, she would call about a party or the 411. It was time to check her.
Damn, you got the motherfucker on three-way? You act like he's your man. If you want him, go be the fuck with him. But don't tell me how to run mines.
Kim had heard what she was waiting for.
Gina, you don't have to be getting smart.
Bitch, you called my house with this bullshit. My best friend has been killed. Just leave me alone, Kim. I gotta go.
Kim wasn't trying to start nothing, being as though Gina wasn't the one to have to fight over a man. She just wanted to know what was up with Jamal. Kim tried to cover up the shit as best she could.
You going to the funeral?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Gina, look, I hope shit goes the way you want it between you and Kadir, and I'm sorry about Sahira, okay?
I can't tell. Instead of concern, you calling me about Jamal.
Look, I got to go. There's someone at my door.
Mm-hmm.
Gina said, happy to slam the phone down, hoping Jamal kicked her ass too. The next day, it was afternoon by the time Gina awoke. Sahira's funeral was at sundown. The entire day was ruined from the time it began, greeted by Mother Nature's gift.
Why must it be this way?
It was her best friend's funeral, and she had nothing to wear. Kadir still hadn't called.
What could be worse?
It had been 3 long, drenching days without hearing from him, and Gina was a mess thinking the inevitable.
He played me. He was only after one thing, and now that he got it, he's gone.
The ringing of the phone could be heard in every room of the apartment, and Gina picked up the nearest receiver. Because she expected trouble, she addressed it.
Jamal, don't you call this motherfucker no more.
Slamming down the phone made her feel even better. Jamal didn't get a chance to say nothing. The phone rang again.
What?
What you frontin' for? Some nigga in the house? He asked.
Jamal, leave me the fuck alone. I don't feel like you today.
Damn, I just called to see if you wanted to use the Cadillac to go to Sahira's funeral, or if you wanted me to go with you, said Jamal.
Jamal, please, you couldn't stand Sahira. How are you gonna go to her funeral?
Why is there so much negativity with you? You don't sound happy, said Jamal.
I would be if you would leave me the fuck alone.
See? Every time you try to be nice to people, they just don't appreciate it, Jamal said.
You're missing the point. I hope she haunts your black ass.
Haunt shit, Jamal said. What, you trying to root me now?
Goodbye,
Gina said, hanging up the phone, leaving Jamal convinced she had done something to him. Immediately, she called her grandmother. Gagid had a house full of grandchildren and was attempting to brush Gina off the phone when Gina told her about Sahira. Gagid was sorry to hear about her friend. She knew the streets wasn't no place to be. She raised 6 children in the streets. Now, she was trying to raise her grandchildren out of the streets. Gagid was really sorry to hear Gina was going to her best friend's funeral. Don't wear nothing bright like yellow or orange, and don't wear nothing too short.
I won't. I'm so nervous about this funeral,
said Gina. Well, baby, the good Lord has reasons for everything. Wasn't no one more closer to her than you? Maybe God is trying to tell you something. Gina, you know these things. You live to die, said Gagget. Gina stared at her phone.
What?
I said you live to die. When you're born into this world, the only thing you're promised is that one day you are going to die. So you're supposed to do the best you can. You're never coming back once you're gone. If you're good, then your soul will rest in peace. If you raise hell like you do half the time, well then, you're gonna have problems.
Gagget, stop.
Stop nothing. But I'm glad you're home, baby.
Me too. But Gagget, it was so beautiful there. I could have stayed there forever.
Well, at least he didn't kill your ass and hide you in some bushes.
Gagget.
Well, what do you call it when you meet a man one day and is off on some fancy getaway to the Bahamas? Did you sleep with him?
I got to go,
said Gina, getting ready to hang up the phone. Have you heard from him since you've been back? Gina didn't want to answer that question. If she told the truth, Gagget would disapprove. Then she would preach the same long, drawn-out sermon about being a lady, not a whore. She even had some old Ray Charles song about every time she went in a nightclub, the whole band knew her name, which she used as a metaphor.
Yes, I've heard from him.
Gina felt her heart sink as she lied to her grandmother.
Gagget, I gotta go.
Well, don't get mad with me. You coming down later? I'm cooking, so you might as well come and get some dinner. Besides, I want to see you for running off like that.
Gagget, I'm grown. I can run where I want to run,
said Gina. Baby, you can never run from home. Believe that.
I am not a baby,
said Gina. Yes, you are. You're my baby. So just run your ass over here after the funeral and get some dinner and stop being so fussy. Gina hung up the phone and went over to her dresser. She felt twisted inside, confused about Kadir, depressed and saddened about Sahira, and mad that Jamal would not stop calling her. She pulled out a knot of money from her dresser drawer. She had won $1,800 in the Bahamas, and Kwa threw her money here and there, but she never spent it all. She just told him that she did.
It's gone.
she would say with a serious blank look on her face.
Why hasn't he called?
She thought to herself, searching her dresser drawers for his phone number. She looked in all the places she thought she might have put it. Hell. It had been more than a week, and with all the weed she had smoked since then, figuring out where to put his number was highly unlikely.
Damn, where could it be?
She searched around the room to no avail. She took a shower and got dressed. Still searching for Kadir's number, she rummaged through the kitchen. She wanted to call him so bad, she didn't know what to do.
Why hasn't he called? Maybe he isn't gonna call.
She thought to herself.
Maybe Gaget was right. Maybe I shouldn't have gone to the Bahamas with him. Maybe Kim was right. Maybe I should have stayed with Jamal. Not.
Back to business.
Kadir rolled over from his sleeping position, brought himself to an upright stance, and planted his feet on the floor. He looked around his bedroom. The new burgundy carpet he had just laid set it off. Everything was new and very contemporary. Turning on the 60-inch screen TV, he turned to videos. As he landed on the channel, he threw the remote on the bed and promptly picked up his weed tray. Things were really starting to happen for Kadir. He was getting money, and a lot of it. He had a squad of youngsters who covered the street corners, had old heads who backed him, and went through 150 kilos of cocaine, if not more, every week. One month, he went through 1,200 kilos. That was the best month. Not only were things really going good, he had women. He had more women than any man he knew. He had so many women, you would think he was the only man on earth. They would do anything he wanted. Anything. He lived his life in the fast lane. Fast women, fast money, fast cars, and the beeper always needed fresh batteries. Things were falling into place. Another year, and Kadir would be straight. Just one more year, he thought to himself. He laid there with his boxer shorts on, holding his crotch with one hand, smoking with the other. Picking up his watch from the nightstand, he noted it was 12:30 in the afternoon. I really slept in, he thought to himself, walking into the living room. Another widescreen TV sat catty-corner against the far wall. A round, aquamarine-colored sectional leather sofa, a large glass circle-shaped table, and a custom-made peach-colored carpet with an aquamarine border going all around the wall was his latest interior designs. There was a dining room, but Kwa made that into a playroom where he put a pool table and, though he never imbibed, a fully stocked marble bar, all beautifully set off by bi-leveled mirrored walls and Hollywood ceilings. Kwa was a man of good taste, and he kept his apartment immaculate. It wasn't the only apartment he had either. Kadir had a room at his mom's house, another house where he let Rasun stay, and yet another apartment far from the city, where he could discreetly take his female companions. But no one knew about it, not even Rasun. He never allowed anyone to know about this place. It was the only place he felt he could relax, the only place he got any good sleep. The old heads had left no stone unturned when it came to Kadir knowing what was out there. The larger Kwa became, the more to himself he became. He trusted no one, and knew that everyone was out to get him or a piece of him. It was really fucked up, and he learned to be extra careful. Rock wasn't careful. His funeral was today. Kwa could not believe that it was the junior mafia who took the boy out. Just couldn't believe it. Didn't want to believe it. Kadir knew that killing Rock meant they wanted a war. He also knew that, by no means, should the boy's death go unavenged. Easing onto his leather sofa, he played back all the conversations he had gathered from the streets. He knew that Rock's death was nothing more than Junior Mafia sending him a message, indirectly. Rick knew what he was talking about when he said the Junior Mafia was trying to weaken him. Rock was flipping keys, getting G's, and since Kadir supplied him as well as a handful of others, Kadir was vulnerable through the people underneath him. He had to be certain of everyone he dealt with. The worst nightmare was getting snitched on. All he needed was an indictment behind someone else's bullshit. He didn't want to deal with that no more than his people's getting killed for buying coke from him instead of the junior mafia. He thought about Rock's funeral. He would not be there. He had been asked to be a pallbearer, but demurred. Qua wasn't really sure why he wasn't going. He really felt bad about Rock dying, but going to the funeral wouldn't make much of a difference. Rock was gone, and Kadir would remember him the way he was. Besides, the hoes be clocking a nigga at a funeral. It's fucked up to say, but it's true. Yeah, they might shed a tear or two, but they're hoping to get a number and meet up with a nigga later. On top of that, the feds would be there taking their pictures and videotaping. Qua dialed a number from his pager and carried his portable phone into the bathroom while he showered. Dressed, he made himself a turkey and cheese sandwich, then returned to the couch and waited for the phone to ring. "Hello," he said, answering the phone on the first ring. "Nothing. Taking it easy, man," he said. The man on the other end controlled the conversation the same way Kadir did with his people. "Next week, same place, I'll be there." He then dialed Rasan at his mom's house and told him to meet up with him on the Ave later. Then he dialed Amar. "Assalamu alaikum," said Amar, answering the phone. "Alaikum assalam," Kadir replied. "You just the brother I wanted to talk to. What's going on, player?"
"Nothing, man. Getting ready to go to this funeral," said Amar.
"You going to the funeral?" asked Qua, thinking of Rock.
"Man, I got two funerals to go to. This girl I used to fuck with and Rock's," said Amar.
Kadir realized he was talking about Sahira.
She sure did get around.
He thought about asking Amar whether he knew Gina, but decided against it.
"You going to Rock's funeral?"
asked Amar. "No, you know I don't go to funerals."
"I must be there. I'm a pallbearer," said Amar.
"What?" said Qua, thinking about his own refusal of the offer. Kadir let a moment go by. "So what's happening otherwise?"
"I'm ready to see you. I want to go to 15th Street," said Amar.
"You want 100th? Asked Qua.
"Yeah, I'm there."
"1 hour," said Qua.
"Everything the same?"
"You know it."
"Assalamu alaikum," said Amar.
"Alaikum assalam," said Kadir, hanging up the phone. 3 minutes later, he was out the door. He got in a 1987 Cutlass Oldsmobile and went straight to the 4U Self-Storage, Inc. Inside his compartment was some furniture and a safe. Just like the one in his apartment, only this one contained 523 kilos of cocaine. He grabbed 15 bricks and put them in a duffel bag. He then placed another one in a shopping bag, which he was going to take to Miss Suge's house. He jumped back in the car and drove to a supermarket, parking at the rear of the lot, then rolled a spliff and set the CD player. He sat patiently, as if waiting for someone in the store to finish their shopping until, finally, Amar pulled into the parking lot. He parked next to Qua. Both got out and shook hands as brothers do.
"What's up, man?" said Amar.
"You looking good, player," answered Qua.
"Yeah, man, you know me. I got to be right for my man."
Kadir and Amar talked for a few minutes. Amar assured Kadir that there was $100,000 in the trunk of the squatter. Kadir, in return, assured Amar that there was 15 kilos of cocaine in the duffel bag on the back seat. Kadir watched Amar get in the Oldsmobile while he got in the squatter Amar had been driving. He dropped the money off at his apartment and put it in the safe. He then headed down North Philly to see Miss Suge. Qua pulled onto the narrow one-way street and parked in front of Suge's house. He grabbed the bag out of the back seat. The moment he opened the car door, he could hear Ms. Suge hollering down the street.
"And don't come back in this motherfucker until you learn how to act."
She was cursing some man out for the entire block to hear.
"You dumbass motherfucker, you. I don't know why I even let you in here. You not fit to be in no house."
"Who was that?" he asked her, walking up the sidewalk to her door.
"Some nigga my granddaughter brought in here," Suge replied. "His ass damn sure looked like what the cat drug in. Don't make no sense. He gonna stand up there and tell me to go to hell. He lucky I didn't break his goddamn neck," she said, taking a breath.
"Come on, get your ass back in the house. Titties hanging out and shit. How you playing, Suge? See, you got all the neighbors looking. Come on," said Qua, walking her back in the house. Kids was all over the place, and as soon as they seen Kadir, they ran over to him to get a dollar. The house was always junky, but today it seemed as if there was an abundance of junkiness, cluttering up any space the house may have once had. You could easily tell that too many people were occupying the 3-bedroom row home. "Where do all these motherfuckers sleep?" Qua thought to himself, looking all around.
"Suge, why the house so hot?" asked Qua. "All these lazy niggas in here. Shit, you can hardly breathe in this motherfucker. I wish they would come and get their kids and take them to hell on somewhere and buy my fan that these heathens done broke today. They got my blood pressure up so high, Lord, I'm surprised I haven't dropped it."
She took the bag out of his hand and broke up the coke.
"There's no way in a cat's ass you gonna get me in this hot-ass kitchen cooking all this shit today. I'll cook some, but I'm not cooking at all. You hear me, Kadir?"
"Yeah, I hear you." As he sat next to the kitchen window talking to Suge, he felt a cool breeze kissing his face. He talked to Miss Suge about everything. She had her ways, but she wasn't nobody's fool. Most old people weren't. They had been here long enough to know how not to play the fool. Suge was full of wisdom. It was one thing to hear her. It was another to listen. When she was done, Kadir handed her $500 and stepped.
"When you gonna get my fan?" she asked.
"Tomorrow."
"Nigga, you know you is a lie. Besides, I'm gonna get me an air conditioner right now."
"You better before your ass drops dead in that motherfucker," hollered Kadir.
He got an Amar's squatter after Suge cursed him out and headed down to the Ave. Everybody was out. It was the crew. Qua was happy to see his bucks out there. He shook hands with everybody and got right in the middle of the conversations with them and started kicking it.
"Yo, look at that girl,"
Pookie said, pointing his finger. On the opposite side of the street, approximately 20 feet from where they stood, a girl had pulled her pants down, exposing herself. She slightly bent her knees and started peeing in broad daylight between two parked cars.
"She really don't give a fuck," said Ra.
"She got to be high," said Reds.
"I told y'all pipers were inheriting the earth," said Pookie.
Wiz spotted 3 girls walking down the opposite side of the street.
"Hey, baby in the blue,"
he called out.
"Why are you messing with them girls?"
said Pookie, turning his face up.
"Yo, I like fat girls too. Don't get that shit twisted. I'm not the one to discriminate. Skinny, fat, tall, short, light, dark, it don't make a difference, man,"
said Wiz. The girls walked over to Wiz and engaged him in conversation. The rest of them looked at the girls real mean with a "don't even think about it" expression on their faces.
"I got a boyfriend," said the girl in blue.
"So, I got a girlfriend," said Wiz.
Well, why are you trying to talk to me?
Because can't we be friends? Said Wiz.
No, I don't think so,
said the girl as if she had checked Wiz out and was completely turned off.
Well, fuck you then.
Man, leave them girls alone. Excuse him, said Qua as the girls walked by him.
Fuck you too,
the girl said, walking away.
Only if you promise to diet.
At that, everyone, even Kadir, had to laugh. Kadir walked over to his Jeep, which Ra had parked up the block. Ra's son followed right behind him. They decided that Reds and Wiz would go back up the way and help cap the package. Kadir handed him the keys to Amar's squatter and left. Across town in West Philly, Sahira Bowden was being laid to rest. Outside, it looked like a car show. On the inside, Gina saw the girlfriend she and Sahira traveled with. It wasn't packed, but it wasn't empty either. A lot of brothers were there. Bridget said she had seen brothers come through for the viewing. It was really nice that everyone came to say goodbye to Sahira, and even though they didn't stay through the funeral, they did come out to pay their last respects. She was so young and looked so pretty in a soft pink cashmere sweater with a matching skirt. Gina couldn't see her shoes because there were flowers covering the bottom half of the casket. The preacher's bellowing voice echoed over the body of her friend that laid peacefully beneath his pulpit, the congregation agreeing with him readily. Miss Bowden had lost control. The funeral nurse rocked her throughout the sermon. Gina sat with her head hanging low, feeling the loss of her best friend like an empty pit at the bottom of her spirit. Who would she laugh with? Who would she share with? Who would be her friend? As the preacher preached, a tear fell from every word he spoke. Why did the words, beloved friend, make her fill up even more? What about Mr. and Mrs. Bowden? They lost a child. How are they gonna deal with it? She glanced up and looked around the church. There was a huge crucifix suspended behind the ornate wall where the preacher was standing. Large blocks of stained glass windows allowed the last bit of sunlight to shine through as the service proceeded. The faces of the people sitting in row after row of the beautiful Gothic church were just as tormented and distraught as the next.
Dear God,
she prayed,
take my friend Sahira in your arms. Love her, protect her, give her peace.
Gina surveyed those gathered to bid farewell to the young, beautiful girl they all knew, stopping at a familiar face. All prayers and reasoning power flew from her perspective. She couldn't believe it.
Sacrilege.
He was sitting there, two rows in front of her, on the right side of the church. He even had the gall to acknowledge that he saw her.
Oh my God,
she thought, feeling that it was appropriate to express the Lord's name. The first word that actually came to her mind would surely be unseemly in this church setting. Jamal was there, sitting with Kim. Kim who, just the night before last, had preached to Gina about how she should not break up with him.
That bitch,
Gina thought to herself. She felt a little funny inside seeing Jamal with Kim. That miserable man. She couldn't believe how he had called and offered to bring her, then had the nerve to show up with Kim. She saw right through him. Jealous that Jamal was there with someone else was one thing. The aching betrayal that was setting in her made her furious.
Don't nobody need to lie to me. Why didn't she just say she was interested in Jamal? Why didn't he say, well, maybe I'll see you there anyway. Or maybe I'll bring Kim.
He wasn't paying any respects. He was there to hurt Gina. She faced the altar and concentrated on her friend. The service lasted more than an hour. Sahira would be buried the following morning at 10. After today, Gina didn't know if she could take any more. She had shed all the tears she wanted to and put the memories of Sahira inside her heart, where they would be forever cherished.
Her only consolation was that Gina knew she had a friend in Sahira, and she hoped and prayed to one day see her friend again. The firm belief that Sahira would always be with her, plus the memories they shared, is what helped Gina get through the service. As the congregation made its way down the aisle and outside the church, Gina just sat still and waited for Jamal and Kim to leave the building. She wanted to watch them leave together to be sure they were together. As they walked down the aisle, Jamal was a few steps behind Kim, all smiles.
What the fuck is he smiling about?
Gina thought to herself as they stopped at her pew. Hi, Gina, Kim said. Gina coldly acknowledged them both, silently rolling her eyes at them.
Didn't take you long, Jamal.
What do you care for? Don't you want Kadir? He asked.
I don't want him. I am his,
said Gina, her eyes glaring at Kim as if she could rip the bitch apart.
I'm through with him. He's all yours.
She spat at her before staring Jamal down, waiting for him to say one single word out of his pathetic, sorry face.
If you'll excuse me, I got better things to do,
she said. All of Jamal's feelings were crushed. He couldn't believe it. She really wasn't that upset he was with Kim. His plan failed. At that moment, he got the picture that it was really over. Fucking bitch, he rasped.
Jamal, you're in a church, said Kim.
God understands. He made all of you, didn't he?
Jamal asked, looking at Kim, waiting for her to say he was right.
Come on, Jamal,
she said, leading him out of the church. Outside, Gina saw all her girlfriends, girls from the beauty salons, girls who worked at the mall, girls she hung out with in the park, girls who were close to both her and Sahira.
Yo, G, what's up? Said Bridget.
Guess what? Jamal is here with Kim.
Bridget took the bait.
You should have known. I never trusted that motherfucker. Bitch ain't nothing but a whore, and she don't be bullshitting when it comes to your man, neither.
I didn't know the bitch rolled like that,
said Gina, knowing that Bridget was just as slimy as Kim.
Please, she fucked Adrian's man and then called her on the phone and told her. She said she felt bad about it, and as a friend, she had to tell Adrian about her man. Now, you know the bitch is crazy, because the day she ring my phone with some shit about my man, it's gonna be the day she gets her ass kicked.
I'm not fighting over no Jamal,
said Gina, even though she wanted to. Bridget glanced across the street.
Look, isn't that Quadia?
Gina's heart raced, her mind scrambled, and her eyes darted.
Where? I don't see him.
Kadir was in his black Range Rover, with the black tinted windows, which Gina had never seen. So, she turned her back, not wanting to be seen, trying to see something she didn't.
Yo, the kid is so large, it's ridiculous, said Bridget.
Andrea walked over to where Gina and Bridget were standing.
Yo, what up? I'm so sorry about Sahira, she said, giving Gina a hug.
Gina returned her embrace.
I know. I'm really torn up about it.
Yo, I wonder what he's doing out here, said Bridget.
Who? Andrea wanted to know.
That kid Quadir from down North Philly, said Bridget. Oh, God, is he out here? Where? Girl, that motherfucker is a millionaire,
said Andrea, pulling out a pocket mirror. You would have thought she had a winning lotto ticket in the palm of her hand. Gina just stood there feeling two disappointments, one after the other. She felt so fucked up inside. What if he was there to see another girl? What could be worse besides her girlfriend standing there getting their panties wet over a Range Rover? Qua pulled the Jeep over and parked. Gina just stood there with her back turned from him, knowing his every move from the Channel Zero news reporters.
He's walking over here, said Bridget.
The Lord is truly among us, said Andrea, looking at the sky, happy to be near the church. Gina was so nervous. She wanted to turn around so bad to see exactly where he was. He stepped from behind, put his hands up to her eyes, and bent into her ear.
Guess who? He said.
I hope it's who I want it to be,
she said, pushing back against him.
Who do you want it to be?
He asked, with his hands still covering her eyes.
I want it to be Quadir.
Andrea and Bridget just looked at each other in disbelief. Gina wanted to pull him over to the side and tell him how much she missed him, kiss him 1,000 times, and ask him why he hadn't called. But instead, she carried on real cool and casual with the conversation.
I thought you didn't come near funerals,
she said after he let her go.
I don't, but I knew you would be here.
Gina just stood there looking him up and down as if she had a serious attitude about something.
Come here, he said, as he snatched her arm and pulled her over to the side. What's your problem?
Nothing.
Yes, it is. You want to tell me about it?
Okay. For starters, you act like you didn't want to see me anymore when you dropped me off. You never called, and you left me like it was nothing to you. Then I come home to find out that my best friend has been murdered. You have no idea how I've been feeling. I thought we had something. I have no idea where you're coming from. I thought I did. But I don't.
You got the pager number, he said, cutting her off. Why didn't you call me?
Because I couldn't find it. Besides, you said you were coming back.
Baby, I was taking care of my business, that's all. If I was fucked up and broke, you wouldn't want to talk to me.
That is not true. Yes, I would too,
she said. No, you wouldn't. Don't no woman want no broke-ass man. This was true, Gina thought to herself as she cracked a smile.
Money isn't supposed to matter.
Yeah, well, tell that to those miners standing over there, said Qua, using his head to point to Gina's girlfriends. Gina started laughing. Yo, I couldn't stop thinking about you. I missed you, he said.
I missed you too.
Gina went to grab him, but he grabbed her and pulled her close so he could kiss her. The anchor women down the street acted like they were on CNN's payroll. The news bulletin read, Gina got it going on. Don't you wish it could be you? And they wanted more news. Bridget started walking over to them, and Kadir let Gina go. Gina saw Jamal turning the corner and speeding away as if the police were after him, looking right at her.
Hi, Kadir, Bridget said, in an I'm cheap. You can fuck me voice.
Hi, he said, looking at her. Do I know you from somewhere?
No, I don't think so, said Kim's twin.
Do you know Black?
Gina asked, putting an end to the madness.
Yeah, that's my man. That's where I know you from, Black. Where's he at? Qua said.
Oh, he's downtown, said Bridget, gritting her teeth at Gina.
Well, tell him to get at me.
I will. Turning to Gina, she asked her if she needed a ride home.
No, I'm okay.
She turned to Kadir.
I'm okay, right?
You're better than okay. You're with me now. Come on.
Where are we going?
She asked as he led her to his Jeep.
Anywhere you want to go within city limits, he replied, opening the door for her.
I got something for you,
she said.
What is it?
He asked. Gina scrambled through her MCM bag and pulled out a folded piece of paper and handed it to him. Kadir unfolded the paper and began reading.
Come back. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Will you come back? Or don't you know? Or will you get scared and keep running away, forgetting feelings that won't go away? You can't shake it or fake it, these feelings inside. If you just stop running, I'd be by your side. Forever your lady, forever my man, for the rest of my life, or until the world ends. I'll love you. You'll see that you can't hide, and these feelings are memories of moments lost in time. The sooner you realize, the better I'll be, and my love will always be there for you. From me, G.
Come here, he said, pulling her next to him, their lips touched as he kissed her deeply. Gina just sat there smiling. She thrived off mad affection.
Did you see Bridget? Ain't she a trip? She had no idea I was seeing you. No one did except for Sahira. And then I talked to Kim.
Kadir just sat there, blocking Gina out for a moment. He thought of the bright side of Sahira's untimely death. Rod told him that Sahira knew about Sherelle being in the Bahamas with him. He knew Sahira was waiting to tell Gina. They should remember Sahira as a big mouth, he thought to himself as he tuned Gina back in.
Bridget is really a trip. She had to come over there and try to get in your face.
I dug her. I knew that I knew her from somewhere, said Kwa.
You know her from Black, or you might know her from the boy Rich Green.
Rich Green, Kwa thought to himself. He knew he didn't like that guy. Rich Green was out to make a name for himself as a member of the Junior Mafia. He was the one who had beef with Kwa's young bucks. She fucks with Rich Green, too?
Yeah, but that's supposed to be on the DL.
I know Rich Green. Does Black know about them?
I don't know. Tell him.
Kwa and Gina kicked names around for a long time. It seemed that for every brother Kadir named, Gina had one of her girlfriends to match with them. Do you know who Black's woman is? Said Kwa.
Bridget?
Said Gina, looking at him. No. Her name is Pam, Kadir retorted. And she is set for the rest of her life. If you ask me, Black is running game on your girlfriend. She's so busy thinking she's being sneaky and getting over, when in reality, she's getting played. He paused. The sad part about it is that if Bridget isn't careful, she will probably wind up like your girlfriend, Sahira. That's why you're on probation.
Why am I on probation? I haven't done anything.
I know you, Gina. I've been watching you for a long time. I heard your name before. I saw your face, and trust me, baby, the two go together well.
Well, what did you hear about me?
I got the dirt on you. I had to dig deep. And you're not so trustworthy, are you?
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
You just don't know what you're talking about.
Gina hated when people talked about her. I know at least two brothers you messed with while you were supposed to be with Jamal. Kadir laughed.
What are you talking about?
You said your conscience was bothering you, and you couldn't see them anymore because of Jamal. You came off like a saint. That's why you're on probation.
Who?
I'm not saying.
That's because you're lying. It's not true.
She was so fucking convincing, she could have been on television. Until he said a name. Dion. Remember?